address a monk. Your emptiness is very good. Although when I was in Malaysia, I was telling people to call me your roundness. Which is also a funny thing to say, your roundness, Ajahn Brahm. Can you please explain in scientific terms how meditation can give one supernatural ability to predict the future and look into past lives of others, not themselves? I can predict the future because I've got very good meditation. Your future is uncertain. And I am going to be right. So you cannot predict the future. No one can. Except to say, each one of you are going to die. That's my prediction. That's about as far as you can get. So no, anyone who says they can predict the future, they are a fraud. And if you go to any fortune tellers, number one, never trust a poor fortune teller. If they're not filthy rich, if they can't tell their own fortune, how on earth can they tell yours? So, and the past life of others, it's only you can look in your own past lives, not in others, unless you've had a past life with them. So if you know someone from your own past life, then of course you can tell them what they were in their past life because you were there at the time. But that's as far as you can go. But I always remember the story. This is part of Thai culture. There was one of the kings, I don't know, remember which one it was. They had a minister in their court who was always really a smart ass, and they always knew everything about everything else. It really upset all the other people working in the court. So they decided one day to bring him down. So this was their plan. They were going to praise him in front of the king of Thailand, saying what a wonderful person this was, how smart, how wise he was. And they were going to lead him in to admitting he could read people's minds. And even if you can read a person's mind, they say, well, read our minds, and even if he gets it right, they said, we'll lie, we'll say he's got it wrong, just to prove him wrong. So the next day at court, they said to the king, oh, you're so lucky, Your Majesty. You have this wonderful, wise person. He's so smart. He said, aren't you smart? And this man said, yeah, I'm really smart. He's just so wise. He said, yeah, I'm wise. You know everything. Yes, I know everything. You probably even know what we're thinking. Yes, I know what you're thinking. And they thought he'd fallen into the trap. Okay, minister, if you know what we're thinking, tell us in front of the king what we're all thinking. And they resolved that whatever he said, they'd always say, no, you're wrong, just to put him in his place. But what this minister said was, yes, I know what you're all thinking. You are all thinking kind words towards His Majesty. And they said, yes, you're right. They even though they weren't thinking that at all, because if they said otherwise, they'd be in big trouble. So that's really someone who's smart. Now, apparently that actually happened. So really, really smart guy. So if you know, if you go home and your husband says, so did you get anything on your retreat? He said, yes, darling, I'd learned how to read minds. Read my mind. You're thinking kind words towards your wife. Aren't you, darling? Anyway. Dear Ajahn, what is samadhi? In Ajahn Mahabua's book, he says he was stuck at the level of samadhi for 5 years. He said he was being addicted to the total peace and tranquility of that state of samadhi. Please be kind enough to elaborate. I don't know exactly what Ajahn Mahabua actually said because he didn't write any books. These were translations of his talks. But I know that you don't get stuck in samadhi. That is not, maybe wrong samadhi to get stuck, but real samadhi, the jhanas, you don't get stuck in stages of letting go. Have a think about it. Letting go means you're not stuck. You're free. These are stages of stillness, of letting go, of peace. So how can you get stuck and let go at the same time? So that's why, you know, when you call these stages of deep meditation jhana what they really deserve to be called, they're called stages of letting go. And the idea of this anything to do with attachment is totally wrong. And if anybody wants to check it out, the sutra, the teachings of the Buddha. So, you know, don't believe Ajahn Brahm, don't believe Ajahn Chah, don't believe Ajahn Mahabua. Go to the source, the teachings of the Buddha. And there you will find Parsadika Sutta of the Digha Nikaya. The Buddha says anyone who indulges in those jhanas, in other words, practices them again and again and again and again, you can only expect one of four consequences. This is the only four things possible if you keep getting into jhana. And those four consequences are stream-winning, once-returning, non-returning, or arahat. The four stages of enlightenment. There's not a fifth possibility, just those four. So this is what happens when you keep practicing jhana again and again and again and again and again and again. You don't get stuck. You get released. You get the enlightenment. So that's actually how the Buddha said. The Buddha said again and again, do not be afraid of the jhanas. Follow them, make much of them, cultivate them. If you don't believe me, I can get the books out tomorrow and actually show you. So I don't know what actually Ajahn Mahabua really said, but samadhi should not be afraid of samadhi, should not put it down. It should be encouraged. It's the path towards enlightenment. And people who say you can get enlightened without the jhanas, they don't know what they're talking about. It cannot happen. You need the jhanas. You need to be able to let go to attain the to attain enlightenment. So there you go. Once I've managed to achieve sustained attention on the breath, is it okay to count the number of breaths? Seems to prevent the mind from wandering away. If you've got sustained attention on the breath, then you can't wander away. That's what it means by sustained. No more wandering. So stop counting at that stage. If you've got full attention on the breath from the very beginning to the end to the beginning, next thing to do is to create the happiness. Once you get the breath to be happy, beautiful breath going in, beautiful breath going out, then the mind doesn't wander. Sometimes people say, oh, I can't fix my mind on anything. My mind is always wandering and thinking. But they watch a football match and they have full concentration for an hour and a half. You watch your favorite movie and then people can't take their eyes off the movie for an hour and 40 minutes. Even you feel you need to go to the toilet, you just don't feel it when the movie's on. It's only afterwards, oh, I need to go to the toilet, oh, I need a glass of water. When the movie's on, you're focused. Why? Because you enjoy the movie, that's why. Remember, enjoyment, happiness, joy is what fixes the attention onto the object. Not force, but joy. So when you start to enjoy the meditation, you get to the beautiful breath, that is where you have the sustained attention and the mind doesn't wander anymore. Don't forget joy. Make the breath fun. So you're breathing out, oh, it's just so nice. Oh, breathing out, oh, so nice. And I'll be talking about that tomorrow morning, how to develop the delightful breath and the delightful everything. Dear Ajahn, I do get confused with different types of names of meditation technique. What is Anapanasati, Vipassana, Samatha? Anapanasati is breath meditation, vipassana is insight, samatha is calm, but there is no difference between all of these. They're all the same. The same story I tell every retreat. Once there was this couple, they were married together, the guy's name was called Sam Atta. And he's had a wife called Vipassana. Sam and Vi, after lunch, decided to go on a walk up the mountain. And they decided to take their two dogs. I'm going to add another one today. One dog was called Metta, and the other dog was called Anapanasati. And those two dogs and the two people went up for a walk up Meditation Mountain. Sam, he wanted to go up the top of Meditation Mountain because it was so peaceful up there. It was so still up on top of Meditation Mountain. He just loved the peace. That's why he went up there. Vi, she went up there for the view. She took her new Canon double X camera, which can take incredible insight shots over the great distance. Meta, she just went up there for fun, because it's good fun up walking up Meditation Mountain. And Anapanasati, she just went up there for a breath of fresh air. So Anapana, Metta, the two dogs, and Sam and Vi, they walked up Meditation Mountain. As they got halfway up, it was so peaceful, so still, even halfway up. So Sam was very, very delighted. But he also had a pair of eyes, and he was also enjoying the view halfway up. Vi? Oh, she's already snapping so many photographs because she could see such a large distance halfway up Meditation Mountain. But she was also enjoying the peace because it was very quiet up there. Metta the dog was wagging her tail because when you get even halfway up, there's so much love and kindness up there. And Anapanasati, the little dog, was breathing so calmly. The air was so good and so rich. You only needed to breathe very softly halfway up Meditation Mountain. But even the two dogs, they could enjoy the peace and the view as well. But when they got up to the top of Meditation Mountain, it was so still. Nothing moved on top of Meditation Mountain. So Sam had reached his goal. But he also could experience the view. You could see forever the whole universe laid out in front of you on the top of Meditation Mountain. Vi, wow, she hadn't seen such amazing views before. The insights were just all around her. But she also could experience the peace. Metta was so happy because on the top of Meditation Mountain it's not just peace. It's sheer joy and love in the deep meditations. And Anapanasati, the breath, strange enough, that dog disappeared. They didn't know where it was. Because on the top of Meditation Mountain, your breath disappears. So that is how these ones all work together. There is no difference between Vipassana, Samatha, Metta, Anapanasati. It's all just one practice. And if you don't believe me, I often in the interviews, people who try Anapanasati, which means breath meditation, if they can't do Anapanasati, then I teach them breath meditation. If they can't do breath meditation, then I teach them Vipassana. If they can't do Vipassana, I teach them insight meditation. If they can't do insight, I teach them Metta. If they can't do Metta, I teach them loving kindness. If they can't do loving kindness, I teach them letting go. If they can't do letting go, then I teach them Anapanasati. By that time, they don't realize that's what they started up with. It is all exactly the same. There's only one type of meditation, that is putting down your cup. That is meditation. All these other little names are different ways of saying the same thing. So, do whatever you want. The only meditation we don't teach here is called Anapanasati, which is mindfulness along with pain. We don't do that. That's not taught by the Buddha. So if it's hurting, do something about it. So remember, no Anapanasati, Anapanasati. Deirdre, if we all retreatants use one utensil, either a bowl or a plate at meal times, our washing will be halved. Use the bowl or the plate to have the dessert after. Thank you. So this is just using one bowl. And Yeah, you can do that if you want to. But if you do that, I mean, just do like the monks do. Just put everything into the one bowl. So you have a nice bowl, and then just put the curries, the sweets, and the ice cream on top. And then you know what it's like to be a monk. Many times I have had ice cream on curry. The last time was strawberry ice cream on some, I think, some stew. It all gets mixed up when it's inside your tummy. Anyway, just mix it up outside and you save washing up. So whoever said that was obviously been on washing up duty today and got pissed off. So no, just however many bowls you want. There's enough water left. What's that old story about the young guy who went to see his uncle living up in the mountains? And he stayed a bit late, and his uncle said, "Oh, stay for dinner." And as he stayed for dinner, he noticed the plate on which he had his dinner had a little film on it. He said, "Didn't you wash the plate before you served dinner on it?" He said, "The plate is as good as clean water can make it." So he said, "Okay," and it tasted a bit funny, and he stayed the night there, and in the morning, the uncle gave him breakfast, and the same thing was this film on top of the plate. He said, "Look, you didn't sort of wash the plate. Look, this plate is as good as clean water can make it." He said, "Okay," and he ate his breakfast, and it didn't taste very good, but you know, what can you do? And as he was about to leave, he said, "Thank you, Uncle," and Uncle said, "And don't forget to say goodbye to my dog, clean water." That's an old joke, but it's a good one for evening. So you lick your plates clean, and then you don't need to have any water, and have the same the next day. So anyway, just try and conserve things. Can you please talk more about the third noble truth of letting go in relation to letting go of the second noble truth of craving? Thank you much, Metta. Okay. I was probably going to mention this sooner or later because I already mentioned samatha vipassana, but there are actually two types of meditation as I teach them. And this is an important teaching to understand. Second noble truth meditation and third noble truth meditation. For those of you who don't know your Buddhism, second noble truth is craving leads to suffering. Third noble truth, letting go of craving leads to the end of suffering, happiness, nirvana, peace. So what is second noble truth meditation? I want, I want, I want. And what did the Buddha say? That leads to to suffering. So if you're frustrated, if you're disappointed, if the meditation is not peaceful, you have just been doing second noble truth meditation. You've been wanting something. That is why the meditation wasn't peaceful. Very clear teachings of the Buddha. So please do not do second noble truth meditation. And if you're frustrated, suffering, not having a good time, that must be what you're doing. You've been wanting something. Instead, I advise to do third noble truth meditation. Letting go of all wanting leads to peace. To nirvana, the ultimate happiness. So if you're getting peaceful in meditation, well done. You're practicing third noble truth meditation. You're letting go of wanting. So now you know why meditation works and why it doesn't work. But it doesn't work, it means you've been wanting something. So please, recognize what you want, stop it, and transfer to third noble truth meditation. Let go of all wanting. Be content, be peaceful. Be kind, and you'll find you're on the path to nirvana. The mind gets more and more peaceful, more still, more happy. Great, you've been doing letting go meditation. That is third noble truth meditation. So it's very clear. Too many people do second noble truth meditation. I want, I want, I want. I want to get enlightened. I want to get a jhana. I want to get a nimitta. I want to get psychic powers. I want to get something. That means you are suffering, creating the cause of suffering. letting go, let go, let go, make peace, be kind, be gentle. That's Third Noble Truth meditation. That leads to freedom, to peace, to nirvana. Very, very clear. So, trust in the Buddha's teachings. The Buddha knew what he was talking about. Dear Ajahn, if a person insults or scolds the Buddha and Dharma or have misunderstanding, should we correct them and explain to them, or should we be quiet? If we do not explain, we will be creating bad karma. If the person scolding the Buddha is, say, the Taliban, then please run away quick. So in other words, look, no one can scold the Buddha or the Dharma. They can only, when they scold, when they say bad things, they're only destroying their own credibility. The Buddha is beyond being diminished. They can blow up a Buddha statue, they can shout, they can scold, make cartoons about the Buddha statue, but does that really affect the Buddha? Of course not. It can affect people, though. We can forget very easily our Buddhism and go and kill people who desecrate the Buddha. That's not Buddhism at all. The answer is, to this question, is that story, an old story, keep on telling it. When the Marines at Guantanamo Bay flushed a copy of the Quran down the toilet, and all the Muslims were up in arms about desecrating a Buddhist, Islamic holy book. Someone, I think from the Australian newspaper, called me up. They phoned me up saying they were doing an article. They had already contacted the leaders of all the major religions in Australia. Now they were calling me as one of the leaders of Buddhism in Australia. They said, we asked a question of the Archbishop, of the Cardinal, of the head of the Jewish faith. Now they're asking me the same question. If someone took a Buddhist holy book and flushed it down your toilet, Ajahn Brahm, what would you do? And my answer was, you'll know, call the plumber, yes. That's what I said, and made the journalist laugh. And he told me, I'll always remember this, he said, that is the first sensible answer I've got all day. Can I publish that, please? So, of course. But then, you know, it's okay to tell jokes, but then you got serious. And I said, you can flush as many Buddhist books down my toilet as you like. You can blow up the Buddha statues. You can burn down the temples. You can machine gun the nuns and the monks. But I will never allow you to flush Buddhism down the toilet. I'll never allow you to destroy forgiveness, peace, kindness. Those things I will never allow you to destroy. Because that's much different than a Buddha statue or the buildings. The statue, the buildings, the books, the people, these are called containers. The content is what's really important. What does the Buddha signify? What's written in the books? What do the monks and the nuns always teach you? Don't let that get flushed down the toilet. So because of that it doesn't really matter if somebody scolds the Buddha, I'll forgive them. I'll be kind to them. That way, they never can destroy Buddhism. Next question. Jhana Grove is such a beautiful place to meditate, but I wondered what is the significance of having two lion statues at the entrance? Ah, those lion statues at the entrance is to keep out all the bad guys. That's what I say. It's like a Chinese tradition. They have, you know, two lions. Even I remember in Korea, the big bridges had lions on the bridges to keep out bad spirits from coming over the bridge. But the people who offered those lions, they came to visit, I think it was about a few months ago, and they found out that it's actually Ajahn Brahmali. He's got them the wrong way around. One is male, one is female, and they should be the other way around. And they said, what have you done? I said, don't you remember? I said, this is Australia. This is down under. They go the other way around. They accepted that. It's So those are just like protective lines. But if you have a look at them, you know, one is male, one is female. You know, because, you know, lions, they don't wear trousers, so you can actually see what's underneath there. We got them the wrong way around. 50-50 chance that Ajahn Brahmadi got it wrong. What does sadhu, sadhu, sadhu mean? It means it's good, it's cool. It means like, you know, good, well done, cheers, good on you. It's like words of approbation. Sadhu. Dear Ajahn, can the so-called control freak be dealt with, and what will come next? Please explain in great detail on how to do it, to help us, to help it to subside. Thank you. Oh, the control freak. The reason why we control is because we're afraid. We don't know what will happen if we let go. We control because we've been hurt in the past, and we think if we don't really protect ourselves to plan the future, to control our environment, to make everything safe, that it's going to go wrong again. And still it keeps on going wrong. We find the more we control, the more things go wrong. So if you really, really, really want to be safe, just let go. For example, I remember the first time I got a bicycle when I was about 11 years of age. And when I went on my bicycle, I was so afraid of falling off. I grabbed the handlebars until my knuckles went white. I was so stiff when I went round a corner. I didn't balance, so I kept on falling off. Because I was afraid of falling off, I became so stiff, it caused me to fall off. And after a while, you just forgot about falling off. You're just playing around like young kids do. And you could ride your bike really fast and you never fell off because you were relaxed. Even then, looking back, I realized fear caused me to fall off so many times. Fear means you control. Control means you fail. So when you understand how all that works, stop being so afraid. It's all right to fail. No one can make any mistakes in this retreat. I'm not going to give you a report card at the end of this retreat. This is not school. I'm not going to grade you. You're not going to be blackballed. I'm not going to tell Dania and Bianca, look at this person's name. Never again are they allowed in here. No more times. What they've done here, no. I've never done that. So you're allowed to come here again. You can't make mistakes. So when you realize you can't make mistakes, you relax. When you relax, you're not a control freak anymore. So why is it we're always controlling? Fear. So let go of fear. What are you afraid of anyway? Don't be afraid of what other people think of you, because you know, you're not that important that anybody's thinking about you. So let go. You can just disappear on this retreat. So no one is thinking about you, okay? So you can totally relax and just be stupid, do whatever you want. And that way, you don't have to be a control freak. So see, what am I afraid of? And when you let go of all that fear, there's no more control anymore. And then at last, you can be peaceful. And you can stop falling off your bicycle. Sitting under the chaitya, that's the stupa, the monument in the garden, I observed trees in the forest. Only the young plants and the old dead trees were visible in detail, like reading a book, but other trees are closed within the leaves and flourishing. Can you give a Dharma explanation on this? Metta. Now you've been thinking too much. Just watch the trees and shut up. I don't know. Anyway, I'm sure there's something profound there, but it's too late for me to be profound. Almost 2 days gone. I still can't be in the present moment for more than 5 minutes. Am I very bad and hopeless? Wish you well and happy. Yes, you're hopeless. You might as well leave this evening. Get out of here. No, you're okay. All these other smart alecks. Right. Try to meditate. You're probably the only meditator in this whole place. Well done. Look, I remember that story when I was a school teacher, and at the end of the year I had to give out report cards to my class. And of course one of the kids had come bottom. You know, even in a class of Einsteins, there has to be one who comes 30th. But when I gave the report card out to this poor guy, you know, and he opened it up and found out he came 30th in a class of 30, you can see him look depressed. Shoulders drooped, head went down. No, number one, he'd be ridiculed by his friends in the classroom. You're a dummy. But worse, he'd really get scolded by his parents. Imagine taking a report card, your bottom of the class, to your parents. They'd stop all his privileges, locking him up in his bedroom, make him do extra work during the vacations. The poor kid was terrified. And I was not going to let such a kid suffer. So I went up to him, and they all knew I was a Buddhist. I taught him about the Bodhisattva. And in Buddhism, a Bodhisattva is someone who deliberately, willingly sacrifices their own happiness so no one else has to suffer. And I said, you are a Bodhisattva. You deliberately, on purpose, took the bottom position this year so none of your friends will have to suffer what you're going to get from your parents tonight. All your friends were just thinking of themselves and just their own sort of ego coming top or in the middle or somewhere. But you deliberately sacrificed yourself, taking the bottom position so no one else would have to take it. You are a Bodhisattva, and I am going to recommend to the principal that this year you get the Bodhisattva of the Year prize in this school. And I can never, even now I can remember his face. That looking up at me, you know, from his school desk, you guy must be crazy. But it took away his depression, making light of the fact you came 30th of a class of 30. It's a big deal, so what? And then I did actually add at the very end, I said, but in this school, you're only allowed the Bodhisattva prize once. Next year, let somebody else come bottom. So whoever wrote that, the 2 days gone, you can't be in the present moment for more than 5 minutes. You are front runner for the Bodhisattva prize on this retreat. Everyone else just being proud and striving and trying to get enlightened, really up themselves. You are the only real compassionate person. Deliberately not being in the present moment at all. So everyone else here can feel so much better about their meditation. You are so kind. Dear Ajahn, thank you for a wonderful retreat. What? Are you leaving? I am concerned that you work too hard and that you should take more rest and neglect your responsibilities. Perhaps we can listen to recordings sometimes to give you time off. Good idea. I did say in Korea, because they wanted to get me back again, I said, no, I can't keep on coming back. There's too many people here I've got to look after. So I did say, robot monk. It won't cost that much, because now this Madame Two Swords, I think they've got some place in Sydney, they can make like an image of me, and it look exactly like me. And, you know, you can get the mouth to move. That's really easy to do these days, like a wax model with the mouth moving. And all you need to do is to put me for the interviews, and whatever you say, I just say, very good. Very good. Very good. If you want to talk, you just, you know, put a CD in there, and you say, once there were two bad bricks in the wall. And because people actually say that I always tell the same stories every time. Now you know why. Perhaps this is the robot. And the real Ajahn Brahm is in his cave at Bodhidharma. It's amazing. These robots, they look real, don't they? maybe this is just a robot. Anyway, thank you for your concern. Ajahn Brahm, can you please suggest a good way to teach meditation to a small child? My daughter is 4 and never sits still. Thank you very much. Straitjacket. People get absolutely still in a straitjacket. Put your 4-year-old in a straitjacket and a little thing, no, I think that handkerchief, bang it in their mouth. They go, oh, oh, oh. And they'd be still. Now you know why I haven't got kids. Now, if you really want the kid to do meditation, the best thing is for mum to do meditation. If mum does meditation, sometimes the kid just sits next to you. Because they pick up on your energy. But if mum is really frantic and just all over the place and restless, you actually teach your kid to be restless. But if you're peaceful, you actually the kid learns from osmosis. Dear Ajahn, in Buddhism, is there a god to worship? Unfortunately, there is not. We don't even worship the Buddha as a god. We worship, as I said, what you represent. Worship means finding worth in something. So you find worth in sort of what the Buddha stands for. So if you worship a god, I mean, what is that? What do they say? That power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So where does that leave God? Think about it. No, I mean, there's no absolute God. Do you believe in a God? Please explain. I'm confused. I'm not a Buddhist. No, Buddhism doesn't believe in a creator God. As far as this universe is concerned, even the Buddha says in ancient scriptures 2600 years ago, this is not the first universe. It's not the first Big Bang. There's been continuous Big Bangs beforehand. So this is not the first universe. So you say, you know, who created the universe? You say, which universe? This one or the one before or the one before that? And that's exactly what they say in modern theoretical physics. Even about 10 or 15 years ago, Carl Epstein of UCLA, I think I got the name right, his theory, which was a extension of string theory, was predicting that, you know, if a Big Bang happened once, it's going to happen many times. So there has been many universes. This is just the present one. So that means, you know, what do you mean a creator of the universe? Which universe? This is not the first. Even universes get reincarnated, let alone beings. So the idea of just one is ridiculous to me, and ridiculous according to logic. And so about a God who's omnipotent, always in control of things, if a God is in control of things, he's making a very bad job. Could do much better. I could control the universe much better than that. I'm sure you could too. So it's not really a good job. The whole thing doesn't make any sense at all. And it's not necessary in Buddhism. In Buddhism, we believe there are other beings, but not omnipotent, omniscient, all-powerful creators. But there is... there's all these stories. And one of the stories in the Buddhist sutras is this monk. He decides to find the end of the universe. Because he develops, he's a very good meditator. He was called actually Rohitasa. And he decides to use his psychic power of levitation, not just to, you know, fly up through the air, but really go for it. Go into outer space and get to the end of the universe. So off he goes. He's such a powerful levitator, out of the solar system. I mean, not just out of the Earth's gravitational field, the solar system, where the moon and the sun shine not. So, you know, this is a very good sort of description of really going a long way, going away, away, away from the Earth, trying to find the end of the universe. And ha, 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 as you'd expect, he dies on the way. And then when he gets reborn, he wants to find out. He said, look, I went, you know, as a monk trying to find the end of the universe. And so he goes to these devas, these lower gods, and say, now, where's the end of the universe? And these realm of gods say, we don't know, but there's another realm of gods above us. Go and ask them. So he goes up. He keeps getting past up and up and up and up. Till he gets finally to the realm of Brahma's retinue. Now this is equivalent to the guys who hang out with the Christian god. And he said, where does the universe end without remainder? And they said, we don't know, but God knows. Where is he? He said, we ain't got a clue, but every now and again there's a brilliant light and he comes out from that light. And those of you who've been listening to my teachings, that's nimittas. And the Brahma goes in and out of jhanas. When he comes out of jhana, he can ask him the question. So he comes out of jhana, and this monk says, where does the universe end without remainder? And Brahma says, I am the Brahma, the firstborn, the creator, the one who knows everything, the lord of beginning and end, blah, blah, blah. And the monk says, yeah, I know, but that's not what I asked you. Where does the universe finish without remainder? And God says again, I am the creator, the firstborn, the lord of all that was and will ever be, the powerful one, the omniscient one. Yeah, I know, but that's not what I ask you. Ask the question, where does the universe end without remainder? For a third time he said, I'm God, the almighty, the powerful, the creator. He said, yes, but answer my question. And then God takes a monk by the shoulder and pulls him aside. He said, listen, I don't know. But I don't want these other people to know that God doesn't know anything. And you're a stupid monk anyway. You know, you should go and ask the Buddha. He will be able to tell you that the answer to that question, not me. I'm only God, okay? And then the monk goes and sees the Buddha, and that's where the Buddha answers the question beautifully. The beginning and the end of the universe can be found in your own body and mind. You find the beginning and the end in here, not by wandering off to the edges of space. And that became a very powerful teaching of the Buddha. That's where it comes from. The beginning and end of the universe can be found in this fathom-long body with its might. So, now that was a bit of fun and games with God, what God didn't know. And in the teachings of Christianity, there's a similar story. In the Gnostic Gospels found in the town of Narkomadi, dating back to early Christianity, sayings of Jesus which did not make it into the Bible, but which are authentic. And in one of those, they have God is in his heaven, again, saying, I am God, the creator, the firstborn, blah, blah, blah. And then he hears the sound, no, you are not. There are other beings in this universe you have no conception of. And God said, who said that? Who said that? I don't know who said that. This is weird. And that is in early Gnostic Christianity. Putting God in his place. Fascinating. And the early Gnostic Christianity is so similar to Buddhism. Ajahn, can you please do the taking refuge and eight precepts in morning chanting? Thank you. And what do you want to do that for? We already do enough chanting and I've got a sore throat. Come on, give me a break. So you've already taken the refuges. So what do you want to take them again for? Look, all the taking the refuge, you take them in your heart here. Buddhang Savanangacchami, Dhammang Savanangacchami, Sanghang Savanangacchami. And the same with the precepts. You can chant them and chant them and chant them, but keeping them is what's really important. There are too many people in traditional Buddhist countries who take the precepts every time they go to the temple. And before they've even left the temple, they've got a bottle of whiskey in the boot of their car. I haven't even left yet, and they start swigging the whiskey. It's just an empty ceremony for most people. That's why seeing that too many times in Asian countries, now, and actually in here in Australia too, say, no, you keep those precepts. Instead of always taking them, taking them, taking them, taking them, keep them. And that's what's more important. Okay, here's a funny question. Is sex and masturbation mentioned much in the teachings? And if you let it be and do not focus on it, can meditation make sex more meaningful, sensuous and fun? Every now and again someone writes an interesting question. It's usually, the guy usually does this, is not on retreat, but I know that on previous retreats he's written these questions and asked somebody to put them in the box. And this might be one of them. I think one of the best questions the last time was, what is it, is transgender gay mud wrestling against the precepts? Or something like that. Okay, is sex and masturbation mentioned much in the teachings? It is mentioned in the precepts that that is not what you're supposed to be up to when you're on a retreat, because you're supposed to be letting go of the body, not indulging in the body. And if you let it be, you don't let it be, you let it go. You don't even think about it and do not focus on it. You focus on your breath, you focus on the nimittas, and it is much better than sex. So can meditation make sex more meaningful, sensuous and fun? It will destroy your meditation. So instead of, well, this is one of the things which got me into being a Buddhist, being a monk, sorry. I had a girlfriend, having sex with her in Gloucester was the last time. And then I went off on this meditation retreat in Cambridge a day or two later, and about 3 or 4 days later got my first really deep meditation. And it was close enough to having sex, you could actually compare it. You know, deep meditation and sexual orgasm. And because they were so close together, within a week of each other, I thought, wow, what am I getting involved in this sex business for? Meditation is far more pleasure. Lasts longer. And don't have all these like relationships, you know, stickiness, you know, having to please your girlfriend all the time. You know, and it's much, so much better. So that really sort of, that literally did blow my mind. How come you can have so much pleasure, far, far better than sex? You know, just by yourself, peaceful in deep meditation, it was so much better. So if you know the joy of meditation, questions like that will never come up again. Who wants to masturbate? Who wants sex when you can sit down quietly on a cushion and get a bliss far, far, far better than sex? About a year ago, someone took me to task saying a bliss better than sex. They said, look, the bliss of jhana is in a different league. It doesn't even bear comparison. And I said, okay, fair enough, you're right there. I apologize. It's the bliss of meditation is way beyond, way superior. So I shouldn't even be compared. You get deep meditation and you'll know that. Hi Ajahn, some of us are born sprinters. Majority of us are average runners. And although training will improve our results, we can only dream to run 100 meters in 10 seconds. And there are some among us who cannot run for a number of reasons. Is it similar with meditation? No, because meditation used wisdom power. Just like, you know, the school I went to, which was in Hammersmith in London, is one of the top schools there, which I got scholarships for. It was on the River Thames. It was actually, you know, on the river. And so, during the winter time, for sport, we go cross-country running, which meant we'd go off to Hammersmith Bridge, cross Hammersmith Bridge, along the towpath to Barnes Bridge, Barnes Bridge over there and back along the towpath to school. The smart kids would put a few sort of coins, you know, in their sort of kit. And when they crossed Hammersmith Bridge, they'd catch the bus to Barnes Bridge. And the teacher would be on the bridge there, making sure you actually got there. They'd cross over, you know, make it look a bit sweaty, and then get the bus on the other side back to school. They were the smart kids. I mean, it was a very top school, so they could do things like that. Totally outwitted. That was supposed to be cross-country running. So, yeah, I mean, some are born runners. Some are much smarter than that. They take the bus instead. And that was true, that happened. That was really good fun. So, if you're wise and smart, you don't need to be a good sprinter and you can still come back early after the cross-country run. So, is it similar with meditation? Some of us don't have to do much and get results fast. The majority struggle and one's life is not enough to cross the finish line, and some try but will not improve at all. No, I tell you where to catch the bus. So even those who can't run for their life, you can catch the bus and still get to jhana, even before all those smart addicts who decide to do it by themselves. So anyone here can get jhanas. I'm not saying you will, but you can. There's nothing preventing you. And it's wisdom does it. Not willpower. Being smart is how you achieve. Experiencing vibration or some sort of energy flow during meditation should suppress or go with the flow. Sometimes my body will sway and move if I follow the flow. Marvelous. When I went over to Korea, people were asking me, did you see Gangnam Style? And now you can see Gangnam Meditation Style in Korea. I've never seen Gangnam Style, but apparently it's just dancing around all over the place. So if that happens in your meditation, that must mean you'll be doing Korean meditation, Zen style. But no, if you want to sway, sway. But the important thing is, if you are doing swaying meditation, please sit on the ground, get off the chair, otherwise you might fall off. And if you sway a lot on the chair, it doesn't matter, we'll get you seatbelt to tie you up there so you never fall off. Now, sometimes you think you're swaying, I'm being serious now, you think you're swaying and you're perfectly still. You may think, this is impossible, I know I was swaying. Yes, it appears that way to you. But the truth of the matter is, it's just perception is playing around with you. First time, years and years ago, this woman, she was convinced she was swaying in her meditation. And as I was watching you, you weren't. She says, I was. You know, I knew I was me. She said, but I was watching you. My eyes were open. You were perfectly still. I actually threatened to get a video of her, but I never did that. She believed me in the end. But it really appears like you're swaying, but you're not. It's just perception playing tricks with you. So if it happens, just let it be. Don't even worry about it. Just literally go with the flow and it will just stop by itself in a little while. So you're not moving at all. Dear Ajahn, you let go and you are healthy, but I knew people who let go and don't worry about their disease continue to... smoke, drink, and the diseases don't go away. What is it that you're doing right and they're doing wrong? If you're sick now, can you tell us exactly what you would do or not do? Okay. You don't worry about the diseases. But I mean, smoking is always going to cause you a problem. I don't worry about disease, but I'm not stupid. I don't I do rest, I look after my body. As far as, I keep on saying this, being overweight is concerned, you must laugh a lot. That is my trick to balance the being overweight, simply because that article I got last year, read in an article that when you laugh and you are happy, your blood vessels expand. They get bigger and bigger and bigger. So because I laugh a lot, my blood vessels are like superhighways. They're so wide, there's never any traffic jams. In other words, you don't get clogged up with cholesterol and all the other grease and stuff which are in my system. So the more you laugh, the fatter you can be and still be healthy, which explains why all fat people are jolly. Now, Father Christmas, ho, 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 he's fat. Friar Tuck in Robin Hood, he was fat and jolly. Have you ever noticed that? All fat people are jolly. And the reason is because all the fat, miserable ones died a long time ago. We are the only ones left. So if you are a little overweight, laugh quickly. It'll save your life. So I think that's a lot of... There's a lot of truth behind that. So you let go and healthy. We don't worry, because worry is the biggest killer. Even if you have got some sort of diseases in you, the fear kills you more than anything else. I still remember reading that in Edgar Allan Poe, The Mask of the Red Death, when all these demons, these devils, had gone to all the different major cities of Europe to cause this plague. And then they met in a forest somewhere in Europe to compare notes. And this is, in the book. And one says, how many did you kill in London? Oh, I killed 100 people in London. How many did you kill in Paris? Oh, I killed 150. How many in Brussels? 200. How many in Berlin? Oh, I killed only 50 in Berlin. And fear killed 4,000. Or something like that. The numbers weren't exactly like that. But he noticed that fear kills more people than any disease. And I thought, wow, what a great insight that was. Fear kills more people than anything else. So it's fear is the one thing you should really be afraid of. In other words, don't be afraid at all. Worry, worry, worry kills you more than anything else. So please, don't worry. But look after your health. Don't do stupid things. I am a working mum. How can I find time to do meditation when I have so many chores to attend to? Is it not good to go to the gym with loud music when you start to practice meditation? What are the drawbacks if we do so? You're a working mum, so you really need to do some meditation. Otherwise, you're a pain in the neck for your kid. You ask your kid. So often, working mums have come to our meditation classes. I think the first time this happened in our Armadale group. A woman came, and she said afterwards, I never felt like coming this evening. I've been working all day. I made dinner for my family, just washed up. And my kid said, Mummy, Mummy, are you going to meditation today? I said, no, darling, I'm tired. Mummy, Mummy, you must go to meditation. I don't feel like it. Mummy, Mummy, go to meditation. Why? Because, Mummy, you're a much nicer mummy after you come home from meditation. And that's why she went. And many, many mothers have told me the same story. The kids, they know that you're stressed out. And when you're stressed out, you're no fun to be with. So you go to meditation for the sake of your kid. And the kid knows that. And they'll say, Mummy, go. You're a much nicer mummy. So if you're a working mum, you need to meditate. All the other chores. You can just, look. The dishes. Get a dog. Call the dog Clean Water. The dog will lick the plates clean. You know what dogs are like? They eat anything. Or whatever. Get a smaller house, whatever. So anyway, going to the gym. Yeah, you can go to the gym. Exercise the body. This is one interesting saying of Ajahn Chah. He said, if you want a healthy body, you have to exercise it. If you want a healthy mind, you have to keep it still. Very nice saying of Ajahn Chah. I don't know if that's in any book, but I remember him saying that. If you want a healthy body, exercise it, and a healthy mind, keep it still. So all of you, when you get to my age, think, oh my goodness, I better do Sudoku puzzles, otherwise I'll get dementia. We think we have to exercise, otherwise we'll get lose our brain. But actually, stillness gives you a far healthier, stronger brain than doing puzzles. It's a brilliant insight by Ajahn Chah. If you want a healthy mind, keep it still. Healthy body, exercise it. So there we are. Now I'm going to stop exercising my mouth, and I'm now going to have a nice, healthy mind by keeping it very still. All the questions are finished today. Well done. Not so many. Thank you for being so kind. And that question about the masturbation and sex, I'm going to take that back and I'm going to compare the handwriting with your...
Ah, you think you can escape from me, don't you?
So, Daddy, can we have all the registration forms, please? And I'll get it. And if you give a substantial donation to Jhana Grove, then I won't say who it is. Bribery works. No, I won't do that. Not this once. Next time I will. Okay, so let's have a nice evening together. Three sadhus. 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 And have a beautiful night. Is the water back now? Yay, so you can have showers. But don't shower yourself silly tonight. We have to have some water for tomorrow. Have a great night. See you in the morning.